Well, how's everyone doing this morning? Good. It's always a pleasure to be back here. I know that every Sunday morning, some of my favorite people in this community are gathered here in this building. And Paul, what a beautiful playing. I remember, you remind me of George Winston. I had the pleasure of seeing George at the Forum in Harrisburg about 30 years ago, and what I remember is he wore a flannel shirt and played without wearing shoes, and he had these bright purple socks. I see you like to play with your shoes on. Yeah. And Matt, it's always a pleasure to see you. Matt used to live across the street from us on Spring Street, where our office is, and was such a huge help and a blessing to our program. I could always count on Matt, who kept a keen eye on us. He would notice if I was driving a different car or somebody new was working there, so I always knew that Matt was keeping a close eye on the building and would let me know if anything was amiss. Matt, we certainly miss seeing you over there, but nice to see you this morning. So when I saw this month's theme was widening the circle, I thought, well, how serendipitous is that? Because that's exactly what we've been trying to do at Women's Services for the last half dozen years. And the title may seem a little ominous, widening the circle of authority, but really it's all about sharing governance and sharing leadership is what we're trying to do. But getting there has proven quite difficult. Now perhaps I'm not being fair to my colleagues because it's taken me perhaps 40 years to arrive at this perspective and I've only given them 6. But you know, I started working when I was 12. I had a morning paper route, and then I had an evening paper route, and then I worked in our pool's concession stand, and then I worked in a truck stop. I worked in a retail clothing store. I worked in the food industry. You know, I had quite a few stops along the way. But my real learning in terms of work came when I got out of college, and I went to work in a children's group home. Similar to like Bethesda. And I was responsible for about 12, 15 to 18 year youth, along with two other young men who were also just out of college. And we formed this team. And we worked so well together. It was truly dynamic and highly collaborative. I've been trying to duplicate that ever since, but really have not had much success. But I recognized early on that team was the way to go. And then, you know, as I started working in human services, I paid attention to how other leaders ran the business. I kept a mental note of what I liked, what I didn't like, what I would do if I were in charge, what I wouldn't do. And of course, I did a lot of reading. And I think when I was here last and talked to you about vision, I shared some things that I picked up from Jim Collins' book, Built to Last. But I also learned from David Cooperrider over at Case Western, who developed this theory of organizational change called appreciative inquiry. And one of the main points that I took from that was people, as well as organizations, tend to move in the direction of their focus. Now, that's a powerful statement when you stop to think about it, because what are you focusing on? In work, for example, if we're having a lot of turnover, which we're currently experiencing, if we focus on turnover, we're just going to get more turnover. What instead we need to be focusing on is retention. How can we hold on to the folks that we have? What can we do to keep them there? So that was an important lesson. I remember reading mission-based management and servant leadership models. I remember Max Dupree's quote, who said, the first responsibility of a leader is to define reality, and the last thing is to say thank you, and everything in between is being a servant. And so while I had achieved some level of success throughout my career, something was still missing. And when I got here to Meadville back in 2008 and found myself as the chief executive officer for a women's organization that primarily served women and was primarily staffed by women, I thought, now how do I do this in such a way that I'm not replicating any of the coercive and manipulative practices that so many women experience in abusive relationships? I remember, now by no means after 14 years am I an expert on working with women. I remember in my hometown there was a gentleman named Happy Martin who ran a restaurant. And when he was getting ready to retire, and this was a great little restaurant. You could go in, this is in the 70s, you could go in and get a Cherry Coke for a nickel or a root beer float. I don't think the restaurant had been renovated or remodeled ever. I mean, it still had the old wooden floors and creaked, but it was very cool. And I remember Happy Martin wrote this little booklet right before he retired, and it was entitled, Everything I Learned About Women in the Restaurant Business Over the Last 50 Years. And when you opened it up, it was blank inside. That's kind of how I feel working with women. You know, given all of my experience, I still don't feel like I know much. But then I read a book called If You Want a Better Answer, Ask a Better Question. And I thought, wow, how profound yet simple is that? And so I started asking better questions. And I thought, why are we operating women's services in a traditional chain of command fashion? I mean, where does the chain of command come from? It comes from the military, right? And there's nothing more male than the military. So why are we replicating a male model for management when we're a women's organization? I don't know that we were operating in a way that spoke to women's strengths. And why were we buying into this whole corporate ladder business, right, of hierarchy? Because again, in abusive relationships, there's a clear hierarchy, and all the power and control resides with one person. And I certainly didn't want to be that one person at the organization. And when you think about it, the corporate ladder and management practices as we know, it was really designed for factories during the Industrial Revolution because there was this need for efficiency and consistency of production and some predictability. But that's not the nature of our work. We're not machines. We don't interact much with machines. We do interact with computers, but not well. And the challenges that we see are uniquely human and involve uniquely human creative problem-solving techniques and skill sets. That's what we had to get to. And then I read about Zappos. Is anybody familiar with the online clothing and shoe? Yeah. I had never heard of them, but I read this article about them, and they went from this startup to this global force. And in part it was because of their customer service reps who would stay on the phone with you until you were 100% satisfied. They were empowered to make decisions. They could accept refunds. They could give you your money back. And they would just stay on the phone with you until you were completely satisfied. That was not how most online stores were operating. And then I learned that they have this radical self-management system called Holacracy. And the goal of a Holacracy is to create a dynamic workplace where everyone has a voice and bureaucracy doesn't stifle innovation. Okay, now I'm intrigued. So in this environment, a traditional corporate hierarchy is gone. The corporate ladder has been replaced with a corporate lattice. Managers no longer exist. The company's 1,500 employees define their own jobs at Zappos. Anyone can set the agenda for a meeting. And then to prevent anarchy, they establish processes that hold everyone accountable. In other words, they have given authority to the people who actually do the work. And I thought, okay, that's where I want to be. That's where I think women's services needs to go. Because when organizations operate from the top down, it really deprives the organization of insights that can only come from people who do the work. It also slows down the organization when busy people at the top are busy doing their things and aren't in a position to offer solutions and help people who do the work. And it creates resentment from people who feel like they're just simply cogs in the machine. So what is the solution then? Well, it's to encourage dialogue and trust. I have to trust, we all have to trust, that the people who are closest to the work will make the right call. Now, in human services, as I'm sure it is in any industry, that's a big lift because people's lives hang in the balance. And so you have to have people who can make the right call. So that's a little scary. You know, when we're talking about giving up power and sharing authority and decision-making with your employees, or eliminating hierarchy and middle management positions, you're talking about a shared governance model. And it's a little ironic because I spent all of my first half of my career trying to get to the point where I'm the boss. And then as soon as I get to become the boss, I kind of want to give it all away. Like, well, no, I don't want to boss alone. I want all of you to help. I want to share this authority and this decision-making and this responsibility of running the organization with all of you. I'm sure some people looked at me like I was nuts. But shared governance is really a model for the modern era. It's a model that embraces our humanity, our autonomy, and our creative problem-solving capacities. I think it's best suited for organizations who want to self-govern based on the values of equality, inclusion, and diversity. But how do you do it? Well, in a shared governance model, there are three basic characteristics that all organizations who embrace this model have. One, teams are the structure. And then within teams, individual roles are collectively defined and assigned to accomplish the work. So we don't so much have job descriptions as we have job roles. Teams design and govern themselves. And then they have to recognize, of course, that they're nested within this larger organization or this larger team that is Women's Services. And so our teams have a budget. They don't have to come to me to ask permission to purchase a supply. They have a budget, they operate within that budget, and when they need the supply, they go purchase it. And then leadership is contextual, meaning it's distributed amongst all these roles. Not individuals, but roles. And then the responsibilities shift according to fit and as the work changes. So these are some common characteristics in a shared governance model. But what about the nuts and bolts? Well, here, let me go over a few of these. First of all, you have to establish a set of core values. And these core values are what govern your behavior and your decision making. These are the deeply ingrained principles that guide all of your actions, and they serve as the company's cultural cornerstone. They are inherent, they are sacred, they can never be compromised, not for short-term or long-term gain, not for convenience sake. And they must reflect the values of your organization, of your founders, of the people who work in your organization. So we spent some time back in 2014, 2015 developing our core values, and they are empowering others is our guiding principle. We collaborate and engage with all of our communities. And I don't know, for some of you that remember, Women's Services was rather a closed organization before I got here. I mean, they were so anxious about confidentiality and not wanting people to know who was coming to them for help that I think they lost sight of the fact that they have to be engaged and collaborative in the community because our clients intersect with all these other systems throughout. And of course, we still hold confidentiality as sacred, but there's a way that you can do that and be engaging at the same time. We demonstrate empathy, integrity, and respect in all of our communications, and we inspire hope. So those are our core values. And the downside of core values is if you don't follow them, if you don't adhere to them, then your clients grow cynical, the community grows mistrustful of you. You might hear people say, well, they talk a good game, but they don't live it. My kids just recently went to Vision Source for glasses, and they have their core values right on the wall, right behind the receptionist desk, and one of them is positivity. I thought, oh. And I just paid attention as we were in and out over the next couple of days. And it was very true. Every single one of their employees was incredibly positive and upbeat, very hopeful. And I finally said to the receptionist, I noticed your core values, and I'm just wanted to say I think you lived them very well, at least the one I've noticed, which was positivity. Now, had they been negative, had they not been positive, I don't know that we would have gone back. Another part about shared governance that's important is that small groups then form the basis of everything you do. And those small groups, we call them teams. And so our chain of command, our organizational structure, isn't a ladder. It's not the board of directors, the CEO, middle management, employees, et cetera. It's a series of five interlocking circles. Each one of the circles represents a team. The teams are advocacy, counseling, education, administration. I think I would have this. Counseling, education, advocacy, yeah. Did I say five? Okay. No, I missed one. Prevention? Okay, moving on. Shelter, counseling, education, advocacy, and administration. There we go. All right. And then each of these teams have full authority in their domain. And a domain is really just that thing that they are responsible for and have authority over. So each team has a series of domains that have been defined, and this is the thing that they have complete power over. So on the administrative team, my assistant Julie Hunter is responsible for, and her domain is keeping up with social media, the website, Facebook, whatever. And so nobody can do anything without going through her, because that's her domain. And by the way, I don't know if you caught this, but we recently got off of Facebook and Instagram because there was a report, an internal report that showed that Instagram was especially harmful to girls and young women. And we asked the question, well, then why are we on this platform if this platform is damaging to young women? So we got off. And we'll see if that was a good decision or not, but you won't find us on Facebook for now. And then teams define roles in order to run itself smoothly and to package operations into manageable chunks. And any person can fill a role if they have an interest or the right skill set. And it's changing, it's constantly changing. We decided we would make decisions via consent. Now that's different than consensus. In consensus, everyone has to agree. Well, try getting a small group of people to agree. That's a task. But with consent, it just means that if no one objects, then you have consent. And an objection is okay. And when you have objections, then you simply work through those objections until you get to the point where you've integrated all of the concerns and the objections so that everyone can now consent without objection. It's a much simpler process, and it actually works. We don't do voting anymore because, you know, voting just, it says to the losing party, to the minority, that your views don't count. And then it polarizes people. We're trying to bring everyone together, not polarize. So we got rid of voting. And then in a shared governance model, collaboration is everything. Work is accomplished in relationship to one another. And so that means there has to be some accountability. Now, accountability tends to get a bad rep because people, when they hear the word, they think pink slips, they think getting written up, they think disciplinary measures. They think, I'm going to be asked some tough questions and I'm not going to have good answers. But that's not what we're talking about. We're building a system where the team holds itself accountable through the processes that it has defined and developed. So instead of judgment and blame, you know, did you or did you not do what you were accountable for or what you said you were going to do, we ask questions like, well, what happened? What can we do differently so that we can get this project completed on time? It just takes on a much more positive tone, I think. You know, what support do you need to achieve our common goals? In other words, accountability is learning from the experience versus being vigilant about performance. So remember when I said we're giving power or authority to the people who do the work. So here's the thing, and this is what is a little scary to some of my staff. As a staff member at Women's Services, you can do whatever you want to do whatever you think will help you achieve your purpose, your aim, complete your responsibilities within your domain, unless it is outside the domain of the team or the organization. It is explicitly forbidden. Unless it is explicitly forbidden, you are free to do it. You are free to do it as long as it doesn't violate someone else's domain or it impedes other people's contribution to the organization in some meaningful way. So those are the boundaries, and outside, I mean, so long as you stay within those boundaries, you are free to make decisions and act in a way that is in accordance with your aims and goals. That's very freeing, but it's also very scary to a lot of people. And I think I've discovered that if you have a growth mindset, and a growth mindset, and this might be something to ponder as you're embarking on your vision and mission, with a growth mindset, that's this belief that your talents and your abilities, your capabilities evolve and develop through perseverance and hard work, versus a fixed mindset, where you tend to think it's unchanging. Your abilities, your capacities, your intelligence are unchanging. And so I find with my employees, with my colleagues at work who have a growth mindset, they eagerly take on new roles. They take on new tasks. They say, I can do that, or if I can't, I'll figure it out. And they like this process. They like this kind of a system. Those with a fixed mindset, not so much. This is very anxiety-producing environment for them, and so they don't stick around. Now, I'm sure I'm not saying anything that you don't already know, right? Because, you know, the way to get good at anything is to start by being bad at something, right? Nobody starts off playing the saxophone well, right? Or playing the piano well. It took a lot of practice and hard work. People who then approach this shared governance model with a growth mindset are much more likely to be successful, and then they further inspire this culture of experimentation and self-management. So I came across something by Anonymous. Anybody know Anonymous? He shows up everywhere, or she shows up everywhere. And apparently is very wise, because they're able to speak on a lot of different topics. But Anonymous said, I went on a search to become a leader. I searched high and low, I spoke with authority, people listened, but there was one who was wiser than me, and they followed that individual instead. So I sought to inspire confidence, but the crowd responded, well, why should we trust you? Well, then I postured and I assumed the look of leadership with a countenance that flowed with confidence and pride. But many passed me by and never noticed my air of elegance. So I ran ahead of others and I pointed the way to the new heights. I demonstrated that I alone knew the route to greatness. And when I looked back, I saw that I was alone. I remember a Native American story, a particular tribe, if they thought the chief was getting too chiefly, they would just up and move away in the middle of the night. I always keep that in mind and hoping that every morning I go to work that the people are still there. So what shall I do, I asked. Well, I've tried hard and used all that I know, so I sat down and pondered about it. And then I listened to the voices around me. I heard what the group was trying to accomplish. I rolled up my sleeves, and I joined in the work. And as we work, I asked, are we together in what we want to do and how we want to get the job done? And so we thought together, and we fought together, and we struggled together towards our goal. I found myself encouraging the faint-hearted. I sought the ideas of those too shy to speak out. I taught those who had little skill. I praised those who worked hard. And when our task was completed, someone in the group turned to me and said, well, this would not have been done but without your leadership. And at first I said, well, I didn't lead. I just worked with all of you. And then I understood. Leadership is not a goal. It's a way of reaching a goal. I lead best when I help others to go where we've decided to go. I lead best when I help others to use themselves creatively. I lead best when I forget about myself as a leader and focus on the group instead, their needs and their goals. I have succeeded as a leader when my colleagues are coming to work excited, if they're making mistakes freely and fearlessly, if they're having fun, and if they're concentrating on doing things rather than preparing reports and attending meetings. I have succeeded as a leader when I have widened the circle of authority and shared governance of the organization with my workmates. To lead is to serve, to give, and to achieve together. Thank you.